Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Underhood Show presented by Mel Hamilton Ford. We're live from the Chili Bowl, and we've got a special guest in the house, Justin Allgaier. Justin, how are you?
Well, last year when I spoke to you here, we were really good because we were sitting in front of a BMA.
Yeah,
ultimately made the AMA. Last night was a little rough.
But, it was a little rough, but that's okay. You recovered.
Yeah.
Kind of. Right?
Yeah. We get to play a little bit of alphabet soup today. We're in the I main, so
you're
not
the
ideal,
okay.
Situation, but it can be done.
It can be. It's been done before, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's ever been done from that far back.
We got to give it.
Sounds good, right?
Anyway, we're live from the Chili Bowl. It's an exciting time down here. We got Justin Allgaier with us, hanging out with us for this next hour. And 316-462-3673. That's the number to call. Get anything you want to talk about in the automobile world. But most importantly, if you want to talk to Justin, ask him any questions about racing in NASCAR. You want to talk about racing here at the Chili Bowl or just anything at all. Justin, we've got a great partnership with you guys this year and so excited about the new Fox and Allgaier shock package we're going to be selling at Mel Hamilton Ford Racing, and excited for that package or two. Got a lot of things working together with the Hoosier thing too. So, but first of all, yeah, you're here at the Chili Bowl. You had a pretty good, how did everything go before last night? How'd you?
Well, up until last night, it was really good. You know, we had a lot of things that were going in our favor, and practice was good. And we started out last night good, and we were able to win our heat race. And then that's where the proverbial wheels fell off, I guess. You know, in our qualifier, we had some challenges. I don't know what we had going on, but I ended up getting turned around, trying to come back to the field, and yep. One of the competitors decided to change lanes at the last minute. And
I saw that too.
Yeah. I went up and over, and you know, we have an Evel Knievel tribute car this year.
It's a very cool car.
It looks great.
Yeah.
But I was hoping not to make any jumps like Evel, and I think
it might
think
have
the
huh?
gentleman that was in front of me decided he thought it was gonna, you know, he would be the ramp. So
he would be the ramp.
You know, that's where it kind of ended for us. But still, you know, I think this race, you know, as frustrated as you get yep. with it, and as much as it bugs you, you yep. always want to come back and do it again next year. I'm already ready for next year because this year just kind of
roll on, right?
What it was, but now you talked about it too. You know, with the shock packages that we're yes. putting together for you guys, and just the relationship that we've had. I mean, you know, yep. obviously with you guys doing a lot more with Hoosier
yep.
in the last couple of years, and just getting to know you guys, it's been great. We kind of butt up to each other as far as territory goes.
We do.
So it works out perfectly, and we're able to do a lot of things really well together.
Yeah, I do. You know, working with Craig and Liam and all the guys there with the shock deal and the Hoosier thing, it's really fantastic, and just can't appreciate the partnership enough. And talked to your dad quite a bit and everything. Of course, we came over and hang out with him in the pits last night and
yep.
everything else too. But it's a great partnership for how we're going to do that. Got a couple of things coming down the pike with that partnership too. Excited for that too. NASCAR, are we ready for NASCAR?
Yeah, I am. You know, it's been kind of a weird offseason just because, you know, obviously with the NASCAR side of things, with everything in general
yep.
in 2020 and the way that it's going into 2021, you know, just making sure that you know, everything's ready and set. I know NASCAR's done a really good job. I mean, heck, we finished out our season and got all the races in.
That's cool.
So that was great yeah. for us. And we just got to, you know, keep working on it. You know, our program was good last year. We won some races and,
yep.
You know, ultimately finished second in points. So, you know, we were close to where we wanted to be at. We came up one spot short of a championship, but still not bad.
Well, you know, we were in Salina, Kansas racing. And luckily, in between races, we had the iPad up and was cheering you on. And you almost had it there at one point. And we were yelling and screaming for, a couple people come over in our pits, wondering what we were yelling and screaming for.
That's everything usually else. How it goes. Everybody's like, what the heck's going on? But
yeah.
We did come close. We led laps. And you know, the new system where, you know, you're going down to the final race and it's one shot at it. You know, we tried to make a strategy play.
Yep.
And unfortunately, it didn't work out, but it got close. But
it got close, man.
You know,
that one last caution there, and you were right up there, and we thought you had it. And
I thought we had it, and the last caution pretty much was the ceiling of our fate. But hey, still a good year.
Still was a great year, and it gives you good speed and the momentum into next year and everything else too.
Absolutely.
And all the sponsors back for next year is what I'm hearing too.
Yeah, so same thing for me. You know, obviously, you know, our primary sponsor, Brandt Professional Agriculture, they've been with me now. This year coming up will be, I think this year coming up will be 11 years,
which 11
is,
years. That's
which
cool.
is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, for a company to support a driver for that long. You know, the thing that's interesting about it is more than just a partnership. It's more
yep.
than just, you know, having their name on the race car, you know, what we've been able to accomplish together off the racetrack has been really special. And yep. It's something that, you know, I've enjoyed growing and I know they have as well. And so then all of our other partners, you know, the Unilever side of things, yep. You know, they're all back. They're actually, I'm excited about what we're doing with them this year. We're making some changes to kind of how they would do their normal partner activation with the car. So I'm interested to see how it comes out, but you know, it's going to be a great 2021. And
you know, for our listeners who are listening here today, we're with Justin Allgaier from the Xfinity Series. It's still Xfinity next year, isn't it?
NASCAR Xfinity Series. Yep.
And Brandt, what is Brandt? I mean, what, so our listeners can kind of understand what Brandt, who yeah, they so, are, what they do. And
so Brandt is in the agriculture industry. They're a plant micronutrient company. So you know, the way I always kind of always tell people is they're in the vitamin business, right?
Vitamins, really? Yeah, okay.
So you know, if you picture what we would take as a vitamin, that's what they're doing for your crop. So if you're a farmer really? And you're in the agriculture industry, you know, they actually have diversified a ton. You know, they've gone even deeper now, and they actually have a turf division that is growing like crazy. They do a lot of golf courses and make sure that
really,
you know, golf courses are nice and green and the grass is doing what it needs to do. There's actually some pretty famous places that you would have seen that are green and look good because of their products, and it's pretty awesome. So you know, that to me is really cool. You know, fruits and nuts, they've developed products to kind of you know, go on that end of things and really help the citrus and the nut industry to help the products grow. And basically what it comes down to is you know, when you farm on a regular basis,
yep.
You know, everybody always that's around farming at all knows, you know, you plant beans one year, you plant corn the next, you know, and uh-huh. Keep the ground fertile. And what they're doing is, you know, every time you do that, you're still depleting out of the earth. So what they're doing is they're developing products to go back in, you know, replace those nutrients that the ground needs, help the yield of the crops grow.
Real.
And, you know, I think that what they're doing is awesome because, you know, we look at what's going on. We're growing as a volume of people very rapidly, actually.
Yep.
And I don't think coronavirus helped us any.
No.
I think that probably didn't help things much. But regardless, you know, we're growing at a high rate. And truth be told, you know, the farmers that we have now, there's not as many younger generation that are taking over those roles. Mm-hmm. And a lot Agreed. Of farms are getting bought up and it's very stressful and tough on them economically. Some of those farmers are, you know, having to succumb to the financial side of things. So when you get in those moments, if you have more people and you have less ground to grow crops on, it makes those crops that you are growing that much more valuable and that much more important. And so
yep.
They're kind of leading the front on that to try to help, you know, develop products to help our farmers, you know, get the best opportunity they can to get the best yields they can.
Very cool. I learned something new because I really wasn't sure where. I knew they were in the agriculture business, yeah. But didn't really exactly know what they did.
Yeah.
Anyway, Josh, any questions, comments coming in yet?
James Furman on there, and he said good morning, but then he also said good luck to Justin this evening.
Oh, well, thank
so
you.
He's
thank you.
Out there rooting for you, pulling for you for sure. I think James, is he here tonight?
He was here the other night.
Was
yeah.
he here? Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, James, I know you had a good time. But anyway, everybody, 316-462-3673. That's the number to dial up. And anything you want to talk about, we got a great package valued over $130 for each and every caller calling in the show. Want to talk to Justin? Want to talk to Josh? Hey, I get it. I'd rather talk to Justin than Josh and I, but that's okay.
We're here every week, right?
Exactly. So anyway, Justin, thanks for hanging out with us and appreciate it very much. Just excited for you here today. See what you can do in the Chili Bowl and everything else too. Excited for NASCAR to get going again from that part. But so everybody, 316-462-3673. Let's get the phones ringing. Let's get some questions going for Justin or Josh or I, whatever it is. So we can get you this great price package back to you for each and every person calling in. And, you know, Justin, it is we kind of hit on the shock package a little bit and you know, we're always looking for the cutting edge racing, whether it's dirt track or whatever, or NASCAR or whatever. And, excited for the partnership we've gotten with you guys with this new shock package. And, I think we're taking our racers to the next level with those shocks. We've got them in the shop already finally. And I know you guys sent some dyno sheets too, but I've dynoed some of them with my dyno and everything too. So, one of the guys got some shocks from us and he's got a dyno. He called me back and says, man, I've never seen anything like this. And I said, well, I know it's going to be totally different. So let's talk a little bit about that shock bag. I don't know how much you are involved with that with your all because you're out racing and all that kind of stuff. But just excited for the new technology you guys are coming up with. And your dad was showing me the new valving and everything in there last night. It was pretty cool on your car, too.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's one of the things that's been a lot of fun for me is, you know, growing up racing, obviously, you're always looking for the cutting edge, right? And you know, grip is grip. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're on asphalt or you're on dirt, you know, the most amount of grip you can get, the faster your car is going to go. So,
exactly.
You know, when we started the shock, you know, business a couple of years ago, you know, the goal really was interesting because at first it was more, I would consider us a rebuilder. Right. Yep. I mean, that was the direction we were going and, you know, helping customers out because there's just a lot of demand for, you know, keeping stuff fresh and up and going. You know, I look back to years ago, I remember when I first started racing super dirt late models. So, you know, arguably one of the top levels of a dirt track racing, you know, we were running what would be World of Outlaws late models back then. Some little different series back then. But, you know, we were buying these shocks. It kills me to this day to even think about it, but they were Koni shocks.
Yeah,
they were $79. They were steel shocks. They came in a box. You went to your local parts store. You buy them all day long, every day.
Yep.
And that's what we raced on. And I'm not that old, so the technology has you know
advanced
pretty rapidly. Yeah. So you know, for us when we got into it, you know, it was so cool to kind of just watch things evolve. You know, you're watching them evolve in front of your eyes. And so, you know, once we started going down that route, these customers need X, Y, or Z, you know, so we were able to adapt to try to help our customers and be better. Now we've built some parts, as you saw last night, we've built some stuff to try to help, you know, with those processes. And I think that's something that for us has been really cool because when you can help a customer go fast and they come back on a Monday and they got a smile on their face, it makes it worth it. And I think that, you know, we've invested heavily into, you know, trying to make sure that we have the best equipment we can to give our customers a good piece. And I think it's working. I feel like we're doing a good job with it. You know, the more we go, the more it's going to change and keep working on it.
No, I agree. You know, kind of in my situation with the racing and stuff, I was with you years ago. You just went to your parts store and you just bought a shock. You put it on, you didn't think anything about it. And then the dynos come into play. And then, you know, before I knew you guys, whatever, we got hooked up with a guy and I just knew something wasn't right.
Right.
We just knew we needed an extra deal. So that's why I bought a shock dyno myself. And then we started dynoing shocks. And what we were telling our guy we needed, we weren't getting. So we weren't communicating very well. So then we actually got to where we could do a little bit with our own stuff.
Yep.
But I knew we still needed the next level. And that's where I'm excited with you guys, with your technology, your knowledge, all your guys working on that shock package and can't wait. I mean, I'm just itching to get on a track now that I got those shocks just to see how much different the car is. And we've got different setups. I mean, that's the other thing. And it's cool because you got a slick track, you got a rough track or whatever to have a right shock to match because you cannot run that same shock anymore. Well, you could, but it's just not going to be fast.
Well, and the thing is, you know, the details are so much more important nowadays. I mean, you're talking about a fine line of you know, the competition level. You know, and I think, too, it's interesting because you hit the nail on the head. You know, a lot of folks, they just didn't look at stuff. I mean, they did. You nut and bolt your race car. You do all these things. But when it really comes down to it, you expect parts to do what they are supposed to do for a long term. And you know, what we found is when you started narrowing up those tolerances, narrowing up those gaps, you know, you got to stay on top of it and you got to really, you really got to pay attention. And I think that, when you hit it right though, it's worth every second of it.
Oh yeah, it is. And you're right. I'm with you there too. That competition level. I mean, you know, when Jake and I started racing with Jake, he was in we call it the rookie class.
Yep.
And we did very well in that class, and they moved it into a mediocre class. We called it the AAA class. We did very well. Now we jumped into the A mod class, and that competition level is from like a 1 to a 10.
Yeah.
And Jake only having 3 or 4 years under his belt. I mean, that is, you're right. You get to that competition level, it takes so much more to make that car perform. Jake's got to be on his game, but there's so many fine things you can adjust in that car that will change everything. And I made the mistakes at first. I was changing everything instead of just changing
just
one
changing
thing.
Yeah.
It's easy to do. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, we all strive to win, right? I mean, we wouldn't go to the racetrack if we didn't think we'd win. And so I think it makes it interesting because, you know, even for us, I mean, we spent years just trying to come up, you know, you get a little knowledge here, you get a little knowledge there. And sometimes that, you might learn it from two different people, and they're two different routes of learning. And then you say, well, those two don't work together, so we got to go another route. And so, you know, I think the beauty of the shock business for us has been no two drivers are the same. No two cars are the same. You know, even I don't care how well a chassis builder does building their cars. There's always little details that make each car a little bit different. Drivers, they all are a little bit different. So if you can fine tune all those things to where you really feel like you're, you know, at your A game, I think it makes a big difference.
You know, I agree with you on that too. Josh is no different than any business we do with the Hoosier or the dealership or the parts department or the service department. You know, trying to give that extra edge of came with the competition, staying ahead of your customer and giving the customer what they deserve. Just like you talked about, just changing the shocks just a little bit for each person and be able to dial that in. I mean, once I got that shock down to know what that shock was doing, I mean, it's a whole different. We thought we knew what we had, didn't have it. Now we've got it. And so I'm excited. I tell you, I just can't wait to, like I said, get it on the track, see how it performs, see what it does. And like I said, one of our other guys that's going to run the shocks, he called me last night. I was hearing, couldn't really hear him very well. And he's pumped.
Right.
He's excited to try some new stuff and everything else too. So
that's awesome.
Anyway, 316, where's the phone calls? Just get them ringing. 316-462-3673. Anyway, Justin, always happens we go off site somewhere and everybody just wants to listen, wants to call. Normally we get, you know, 9 to 12 calls coming into the show every day. And like I said, we go off site and I guess they just want to hang back and listen instead
of. I got a question here from James. It says, Justin, when do we see you on the track tonight and where are you at in the alphabet soup?
Alphabet soup.
I'm a funny guy.
I'm deep in the alphabet soup, unfortunately. I start on the outside front row of the I main. What's really interesting about my I-main is that the pole car is my teammate, Amelia Hoover. I'm on the outside front row, and the third place car is my other teammate, Brendan Bright. We have all had one of those weeks where just things didn't work out the way we needed it to. But we got another teammate that's all the way up in the B-main. So, you know, we got one car that had a great, great preliminary night last night and two nights ago on Thursday night. Trey Gropp, he had a great night. So, you know, we got one opportunity to really kind of rebound for the team, but I'm pretty bummed with the I main. I'm not going to lie.
I don't blame you.
I don't know, but it's okay, better than the O, right?
Better than the O, right. How many cars you got on your crew team?
So this year we ended up with six total.
Six guys. All right,
yeah,
cool.
So it was a challenge to do six cars. You know, I don't know how guys like Keith do 10 cars over the course of the weekend, but it was good. I enjoyed it.
Good. You got six guys here. Looks like they're coming. And our other special guest just texted me, Brian Holbert. He is slammed. Imagine that. He's the track announcer here at the Chili Bowl. Love to get him on. Don't know if we're going to get him on now. He's got his duties to take care of to keep the race going, so I get that too. I'd love to have him on, but I don't think we're probably going to get Brian on here for just a little bit. He just texted me just now. But six cars, I would think that is a challenge. You know, last night we were in your pits, and I think we saw three guys were thrashing on your car.
Yep.
Had to rear end out of it and everything else and going. And so I can be – well, we sat down just about the time your first race started.
Yep.
And then it's when he did the Evel Knievel deal. And then here you come right back on the track. And Jake was sitting there. He goes, oh, he's got a second car. I said, I don't think so. I said, I think he thrashed on that car hard enough and got it back out there. So do you bring a spare car?
We have no spare cars.
No spare
cars. What we got is what we got. And what was interesting about it was just watching. I mean, I jumped in and helped and you know, helped them fix the car. But just all the people from different teams that jumped in and said, hey, I got this. Or, you know, let me pull that off there and we literally, in between the qualifier and the B main, which is not long at all.
No, it was short.
I was in the last qualifier, and I had to be ready for the second B main. So you got a 15-lap B main that was in front of us. That was about the only time. We literally pulled the rear end out of that car, made sure everything was straight, put a whole front axle in it, and tried to get it ready to go for the B main, and we got it.
Yeah.
It just didn't work out quite as well as we'd hoped to in the B main. We had some trouble last night. We you know, we've been trying some stuff and you know, typically here the curb isn't like it is.
I know the track looks a little different usually than
I don't know if the you know, just the way they brought the dirt in is a little bit different. I know they got some different track crew working the dirt.
Yep.
But you know, that's the hard part about what we do is, you know, we built some stuff to come down here based on kind of the things that we had fought the last few years. And we really wanted to find that, you know, that right rear grip, because I felt like, you know, especially when you're on the bottom, you know, making that car drive in there and kind of stick on the right rear and be able to run the bottom and not slide through the middle and get hung in the slick. We've worked really hard on that. Well, then we come back to a racetrack that literally needs none of that. You just need to be able to get through the big monster cushion. So I was pretty bummed at kind of what happened. But, you know, you come down here and you bet on yourself and hope you make the right decisions. And then when the track doesn't work your way, you got to try to make the most of it. We just didn't last night.
Okay, let's tell some of the listeners maybe listen to us. This is a midget. Weighs how much?
Is
there a weight limit you have to have? No.
Not here at the Chili Bowl. USAC rules are... our power eye rules are 1035, so 1,035 pounds. But here, I would say most cars are down in the 800s.
800s.
Yeah, so they're able to get quite a bit of weight.
Is that
out
with
of them.
The driver?
That would be without the driver.
Without the driver, okay.
So probably right at about 1,000 pounds
with the
driver, which is pretty awesome.
Okay, and there's four-cylinder engines, so everybody kind of knows that. We was kind of watching last night. There looks like there's about four different motors probably kind of running.
I would say that there's about four that are on a regular, but yeah. So you've got the SR11, which is the engine that we have, a Stanton built engine. You've got the TRD engine that like the Keith Coons team would be running. You've got the Esslinger engine, which has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting. You know, that they were one of the first to come in and do the real high RPM engines, and so. They've been around, and then after that, I would say most everybody's kind of got some variation of, you know, the old Gertie was kind of the normal, right? So Gertie engines had a push rod engine for a long time, and so people have kind of derived from that, and that's pretty much what you got. That's your options. And there's a Honda too. I forgot there's a Honda too.
So what kind of horsepower do these things put out?
Well,
for four cylinders.
I would say it's very interesting here because. I would say you have anywhere from some of the lower end guys probably having the 200s.
Yep.
So mid to low 200s to some of the top teams probably are making over 450 horsepower. So
450 horsepower.
Yeah, it's which is really cool because, you know, you're naturally aspirated, no turbos.
Yep.
They are fuel injected, but most people, there are a few teams on electronic fuel injection, but most people are on a mechanical fuel injection.
Mechanical, really? I thought it'd be electronic, but it's mechanical. Okay.
Well, there's some legality rules when you get to the outdoor side of things and you start running some series. There's a certain few motors that are allowed to run a electronic fuel injection, but for the most part, you have to run a mechanical fuel injection.
Mechanical. So. And then, so we're about 1,000 pounds, 450 horsepower, and then we was over there last night and just kind of playing, looking at your tires and stuff. How long will you run a set of tires? Because, well, I mean, them things are soft.
They are very soft, but they tend to hold up pretty well. As soft as the cars are, or as
light as they are,
They tend to hold up pretty well. So, you know, I would say for us, we probably could get by a whole weekend on a set of tires.
Really?
Or a whole week, I should say. You know, from the time we unload, practice Monday, race Friday, race Saturday, we could probably run one set. The biggest challenge for us is getting stagger. So when we go out for an early night, when the track gets really heavy and you're hot lapping, you know, some guys I heard last night were up in the eight and a half inch range of stagger.
Yep.
We don't tend to run that much stagger. We were probably somewhere around seven, but there are guys that get down for the feature. You know, there were guys that were trying to run the bottom. They were down, you know, four and a half inches of stagger. So, you know, depending on your rear tires, where you can get them, but the fronts, I'll be honest with you, the fronts, you could probably run forever.
Forever. There's no weight up there or anything. Most of the time, they're in the air anyway.
Yeah, they're in the air anyway. So they're pretty good. So our guys put a lot of new fronts on, which I've never really understood that. But being in the tire business, I'm glad they put put front tires on. But I don't foresee ourselves putting front tires on.
Can you groove these Hoosiers and all that kind of stuff too?
Yeah, pretty much here at the Chili Bowl, I think the only rule is they just ask you not to condition or soak the tires, so you can run whatever type of grooving you want to. You can grind them, you can do whatever you want to there. Depends on, you know, what your excitement level is.
Excitement level is and stuff too. And then we told me that stagger, I knew there's some pretty good stagger in there, but I didn't realize there'd be 7 or 8 inches of stagger in that car at all.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, you used to be guys were getting up even farther than that. You might get 10 inches of stagger, just trying to get those cars to turn. And
get them to turn. Yeah,
it's wild, and you feel it. I mean, you sit in the car, and you know when you got not a lot of stagger in the car, you sit pretty flat. But they start putting stagger in the car, and you start leaning over it. It's pretty interesting.
So how much do you really steer it with a steering wheel versus steering it with the accelerator to turn that car? Is it about a 50-50 kind of deal?
I have a funny story. My dad's actually sitting over here now. He just walked in, and he's laughing because he already knows my story. 2009-ish, 2010, yeah. Somewhere in that range probably, yeah. I'm going to assume. I went out on the track. I don't know what main we were in. It was a Saturday main, right?
Yep.
Probably, I think it was the D main on Saturday. And I went out there, turn one, lap one, two guys get together. I go to the outside, guy comes up and hits me. Well, whatever happened, it locked the steering gear up. So the steering box on our cars is kind of unique. You know, it runs across and it's actually clamped on each side of the frame there. And then you run an arm down, a pitman arm, and then the tie rod goes all the way to the front and steers the car. So it locked the steering box where my steering wheel was at, and it broke. So the actual steering wheel was just spinning. It'd be like you grab your child's little tight car and you just grab the steering wheel and it just spins. So I was kind of sitting in the car and I'm rolling around under. I didn't stop. I was rolling around under yellow, and I'm like gassing up to turn right and braking to turn left. And I'm like, okay. So we take the green, and I just ran with it. Yeah, I went, and I finished the race. I couldn't get back up the ramp. They hadn't towed me up the ramp. But so I get all said and done, and they all come over, and they felt like I was probably a little squirrely, a little erratic. And he come I'm going to call it the window, but he came to the side of the car, and he's like, what happened? And I just took the steering wheel and I just spun it and just spin it. And he reached in there and just turned the steering wheel, and they couldn't believe it. And that's when I realized, you know, there's a lot more to this than just steering and, you know, understanding where the load of the car was at and how much brake to use, how much gas to use. It's definitely wild.
Well, yeah, that's why, because I was watching last night, you know, just seeing how, you know, you are using the wheel. But when you're accelerating, I mean, the front wheels, there's hardly any pressure on those front wheels. Yeah. So that's why I figured you had to be doing something with the brakes and everything else to steer that car just as much as you're trying to.
So have you ever ridden with somebody and they're a terrible driver, and you reach up and you grab the handle, right?
Yeah.
That's what we do with the steering wheel. You really don't need it, but it's a comfort thing. You feel like, oh, man, I'm actually doing something.
I'm really doing something here. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's got to be – brought that two-seater out last night and run that around. That was pretty cool too. But I would love to drive one of those cars, and that's where Jake, he's dying to get in one of those cars too. But is there a lot of G-force in that car? Well, let's compare it to the NASCAR. It's got to be a lot more in a NASCAR car than
a lot more in a NASCAR. But the thing that's interesting about racing here, like at the Chili Bowl, racing dirt with these style cars, you know, you're on a really small racetrack. So, you know, you're driving that thing into the corner at a high rate of speed for the size of the racetrack.
Yeah.
And you know, when it sticks and when you catch the cushion just right, or when things work out, you know, it's slinging you around in there pretty good. You know, so having a good safety equipment and being locked in there is really good. But what's funny is, like, I look at the modified. So we have a UMP modified that we run, and it is so different than this. So
is
different.
Is it that much difference?
Oh, absolutely. And it's so crazy how everything that I've ever driven in my career, you know, you go get in it, and you know, a lot of it's dependent on the track, a lot of it's dependent on the type of car it is, but it's just crazy how much different they are.
Much different. I could see that too. But like I said, I was watching you last night and seeing that where you're wheeling in there and stuff, and you got to have that butt feel too, I would think, a lot of that in that deal and everything else too. But I would love to get behind one of those cars, but also be kind of scary too.
So I was watching that two-seater. I actually got to give my dad a ride in the two-seater sprint car here.
Oh, really?
So, you know, for many years, Jack Hewitt's brought a two-seater sprint car. But it was always a little too big, right? I mean, the sprint car here on this size of racetrack,
yeah.
I mean, it was pretty well maxed out. I don't know what gear we had in that thing, but I think it was like a 9-something. I mean, you know, literally, it barely keeps the thing running. But it's interesting because they built that midget to come out here, the two-seater midget. And it was actually really cool to watch because, you know, I'm so used to seeing the two-seater sprint car, but it's crazy. You add that little bit of wheelbase, you know, 24 inches or whatever it is, and it completely changed the game. I mean, just watching the drivers that have driven that thing, and it's, I told somebody the other day, I said, when I drove that sprint car, it literally was like drifting a limo. You know, like you're trying to figure out how to drift a limo because you get an idea of where the right rear tire is at and how far that thing's coming around. And with that, you were touching things that you were like, there's no way I can get to the cushion, and you were already up and into it. And it's just wild what that car drives like.
Okay, so now of all the cars you've driven, because I know you drove a lot, what's your favorite thing to drive? Or I shouldn't say favorite. What's the race. Funnest? Yeah. What's the funnest thing to race? Of everything you've raced over the years.
Whichever one wins.
Well, yeah, I get that too.
Honestly, you know, for me, what's cool about it is every one of them is so different that I've enjoyed them all equally in a different way. You know, I really like these cars. I think these are probably, for me, some of the most fun you can have. Now, when stuff goes like it did last night,
it's not fun.
But, you know, I've been lucky enough to I go down to Brazil. I didn't go this past year because of COVID, but the last few years I've been able to go down there and do some road racing with Brandt Professional Agriculture. And they have a Porsche series that they run down there. And so I get to do some of that. And that's been a lot of fun for me, too. You know, they're all so different.
They're all so different, yeah.
That's endurance racing. Then you come here and you got literally sprint racing. I mean, short races. You got the NASCAR side of things, and you got long races.
200-mile races and everything else that you run there.
I think I enjoy probably the races the most of the NASCAR stuff, the length of the races, and just, you know, having to be good for a period of time.
That many laps and everything else, too.
Pit stops, all that, yeah. So, it's just all, it all depends.
You know, it's amazing. You know, you talk about NASCAR again, rolling it. You just brought up pit stops. I mean, that has changed over the years. My daughter Ellie loves NASCAR. We watch a lot of old races and stuff like that. And to watch the years ago when they come flying in at 100 mile an hour, you know, on different things. And now coming in at 50 and everything else too.
Hey, but something cool about that. So my father-in-law pitted my car whenever I raced in the ARCA series. So I saw a picture the other day. He had a picture, and it never dawned on me because I just, you know, you get so used to what's happening in current events.
Yeah.
So I see this picture. He literally had come to the racetrack from getting off of work. He has work clothes on. He's in a t-shirt and blue jeans and a helmet, and he's cleaning the windshield of my car on a pit stop. and I kind of laughed about it because, you know, nowadays, like, you know, the pit stops are so so many rules and you know, fire suits and head socks and helmets and all these things. And I just laugh and I say, man, I must be older than I thought I was, because I don't remember not having a fire, have people with fire suits on pit road. And here I had that. So it's been pretty wild.
It has. And so what, we know we got a new car coming. Is that next year with NASCAR?
Yeah. So the Cup Series car will be in 2022.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. You know, there's a lot of changes being made. They have rewritten the rule book very handily on this new car. So I'm interested to see, you know, what it runs like. I know they've been trying to make some adjustments to it. Kurt Busch and Martin Truex Jr. drove it at Charlotte, and it was really interesting because they ran the road course on the first day and they ran the oval on the second day. And they got out of the first day and they both were just all smiles.
Yeah.
Super excited. The road course was fantastic. And then they went to the oval and they said, "Ooh, we got some work to do." So they made a bunch of changes to the steering and some of the things that they didn't really necessarily like. And they just went back there a few days ago, right about the day I was coming out here to Tulsa. And they were really happy with the direction that they had gone and the adjustments they had made. So that helps tremendously.
So what about Xfinity Series? When will they change? Will that be a following year?
Is that, depends. You know, I think a lot of it is budget conscious, right?
Yep.
So for us, this new Cup car, the goal of it is to obviously cut your costs, right?
That's
a big part of it. It's going to be expensive to begin with, but you know, in the long term, it's going to
save dollars.
But the reason that it's going to save dollars is because we're getting it back to, and as a car dealer, you can understand this, we're getting it back to more in line with what the technology is that we're putting on our street cars, right?
Yeah.
There's certain things that we have advanced and kept up with from that standpoint in the current times. But there's a lot of things that the manufacturers. So, you know, we're lucky enough to have some great partners in the manufacturers that are in our mm-hmm. sport. And their answer is, hey, you know, we use this and we have always used this as a way to develop our street passenger cars. You know, we want to understand, going back to the shock business, we want to understand what the shocks are doing. How do we make our cars ride better? The engine performance, fuel mileage, all these things that make the difference on the street. They want to match that closer and closer as we go. So this new car should have some ability to do that more.
Good. Yeah.
So I'm interested to see where they're able to do that. And the idea for them is to make a higher rate of parity, right? Make the cars a little bit more even and
make it back to a driver kind of a deal, right?
Yeah, make the drivers be the difference. So we'll see what happens, but I'm excited to see where it's going. It's gonna be different.
Do you have any scheduled for the Cup car to race this year, next year, yet?
Not yet. I struggle with it because I'm competitive and I know what I want to feel some of the opportunities that have been out there, great people, just maybe not the right opportunity, you know.
Yep.
And so. Not worked out.
Okay, so how much time do you, in the off season do you spend at Junior Motorsports? Do you do there quite a bit, or has that kind of
because
they're getting cars ready for you now and everything?
Yeah, we're working on Daytona already. I probably go a couple of days a week when I'm home.
When you're home,
you know. So obviously, COVID times has been a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, I've been home more, but on the other hand, it's been wild to say the least. But I try to make sure those guys are healthy and trying to do the best job we can at the shop as well. So, but I typically go 2 or 3 days a week, have some meetings, help them work on the cars, do all that kind of stuff. So it makes a big difference.
Very true. Anyway, guys, let's get the phones ringing. Just, I tell you, every time we go out somewhere, we never get any calls. And Josh and I talk about it all the time. I guess everybody just wants to sit back and listen. Let's get the phones ringing, 316-462-3673. Anything you want to talk about, questions with Justin, anything at all, let's get the phones ringing. And we've talked a lot of stuff going on here with our partnerships, NASCAR, all that kind of stuff. Another thing is popped in my head. How many cars does Junior Motorsports have for you? That's a good question.
Yeah, probably. So what we do is we run on about a 10-car inventory.
10 cars.
Yeah, so each one of our teams at Junior Motorsports, we're going to have about 10 cars. But you have to figure, you know, you're typically about 4 cars per weekend that you're in rotation. So you have the 2 cars that you're racing that race weekend. You got the primary and the backup that are going to Daytona, for example.
Right.
Well, then, you know, for us, like our schedule right now is Daytona Oval.
Yep.
The next week is a Daytona Road Course. That's 2 different styles of cars.
Oh, yeah. So totally different, aren't they?
Now you have 2 more cars being built. And then the next week after that, I think, is Martinsville or wherever it's at.
Yeah.
It's another racetrack that you got to have cars ready to go. So now you got 2 more cars. So, you know, the way that our schedule works, we really have to do a good job of making sure that we have the right car and the right time and right pieces and parts. I mean, it just gets wild.
Yeah. About a year ago, I think it was, or something like that. We went out to North Carolina. We did a little tour of some of the shops. We went through Junior Motorsports and saw those cars and all that stuff in there. And it's amazing. I mean, how many people it takes to make that operation go. It's crazy. I mean, it blew me away. We went to all the different race shops, and ones we could see, we were there for a day, and I think we hit probably 7 of them. We walked, went through the tours and stuff, but it's crazy what it takes to put that car on the racetrack. How many people's involved and everything else to put you on that racetrack?
It's a lot. And we're pretty lucky in the fact that we have a lot of great employees, but we don't have a lot of employees, right?
Yep.
We're on the smaller side of the number of people that we operate on, whereas, some of the bigger teams, it's not uncommon for some of these bigger teams to have, 600-700 employees, which is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
For us, I think all in, we're right around 150 employees.
150 at Junior Motorsports.
Yep. But here's the thing. It takes every one of those employees working at 100%, to operate the way that we do. And they do a great job. That's the one thing I tell people all the time. When we go to the racetrack and we don't win, it's not for lack of effort.
Oh, yeah.
It's not for lack of effort because our guys put in the effort, time. We have a great organization and just really proud of the folks that work in our shop.
I'm sure you are. And, it's amazing to me, too, is how neat and clean and professional all those shops were that we went through, and the amount of money in those buildings and everything that it takes to put that together. But again, you got to have that organization to be neat and clean and tight and make those cars. And because, like you said earlier, just a one little bit of a mess up or one little bit of a deal, and you're done.
Done. Absolutely done.
Yep. So we got a question on here. It says there's been talk in the past couple of years about a new manufacturer possibly coming into NASCAR. What manufacturer do you think would be the best fit to come into the sport or back to it in one case?
I've been hearing is it Honda?
And they've probably been the most heavy rumor mill, I would say.
Yep.
You know,
I'm surprised Dodge hasn't tried to get back into.
Yeah.
You know, the hardest part is, and I think all of these manufacturers are looking at it from a standpoint of, relationship building.
Oh, yeah.
When you're in the garage every week and you're dealing with guys, whatever brand of manufacturer you're with, you may still have friends or, allies in another camp, right?
Yep.
And so you have those working relationships. For a company like a Honda or I think VW was one of the other ones that had looked at it. They're the parent group, right, of one of their brands. That's a big initial investment, but it's also a big time investment, right? Because you're going to come in and you're going to have to meet all the people and figure out what race team is the best, fit for you. And the three manufacturers we have right now run very efficiently.
Yes, they
do. And they, they've done a great job with parity as far as trying to make sure that all the manufacturers are even. So I think it would be very hard for a manufacturer to come in with the current car. Now, with the new car, when we go in 2022, I definitely think that a manufacturer could come in and make some deals. It'd be interesting to see what it would look like. But if they're, as of right now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's been one of the folks from NASCAR said that for the first season, so 2022, there will not be a manufacturer change. So,
oh, really? Okay.
Now, I don't know if that's because they're not going to allow them in or if, a team isn't ready, or not a team, but a manufacturer isn't ready to do it for the first year or what. But it'd be interesting to see what happens.
It's going to be interesting, I think, too. And like I said, I'm surprised Dodge hasn't gotten back into it as much as they've got racing going on in their drivetrains and all that kind of stuff, too. But I get that part. It's a huge investment. It's a huge time investment and people investment. I mean, to get the right crew to help to do that and everything else, too. So,
well, like you said, when you show up, you want to show up and win. So,
to build a program and not win with it right away. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's exactly right. All right, Josh, I don't know why it just happens every time we travel, we get no calls, but that's okay. I love Tettner talking to Justin. And again, 316-462-3673. Let's get some questions for Justin or just anything you want to talk about. We got this great price package we give away for each and every caller. And but that's okay if we don't get any calls. We can sit here and chit-chat more about racing because that's in my blood. I love to go race and everything else too. Just every time I come here to the Chili Bowl, this is my fourth year and I cannot believe the racing person I am in my blood. And I haven't been here years before this because it's so much fun. And I will tell you, Ellie, my daughter is fit to be tied because when they announced 25% of where they're going to get tickets, I thought there's no way I'm going to get tickets. There's no way. Well, all of a sudden they showed up in the mail. Well, I told her, you wouldn't get no tickets. So she made plans to do other things. And she was so mad and fit to be tied that she wasn't going to get to go here. So she was watching the Flow Racing last night and everything else too. But it's just so much fun here. And it's not the same with not all the people here. I get that too. But it's just a blast down here to go race and everything else. Do you race this midget any other time during the year? Or just only, it's the only time you've got to race it, right?
Well,
it's your schedule.
I made a deal with my wife and my daughter that this would be it. Because of the way these cars are, and when you get to the outdoor side of things, a lot of racetracks are bigger, and there's a lot more that goes into it, not that you couldn't get hurt. I mean, I could literally walk outside, slip on some ice, and fall down. And
exactly.
Hurt myself, right. Yeah. So it's not that I'm scared of the cars by any means, but I felt like the risk versus reward. For me, this is a great opportunity to come and run. But with what I do on a regular basis, it hasn't been worth it. Right.
Yep.
We do have a modified, so I'll get to go run it, hopefully 10, 12 times this year.
10, 12 on a modified.
They were fortunate enough this summer. They actually ran our modified. Nick Hoffman drove our car.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Won the UMP National Championship and the UMP Summer Nationals Championship. So,
that's very cool.
Yeah. They started out
did you have the Algar shocks on that car?
We did. Yes. That was a great thing. It was funny because we started out and Nick had sold the cars that – so Nick is the owner of Elite Chassis.
Elite
He had some cars that he had built for himself, and customers needed cars right away. And so he sold his personal cars.
Did he?
And you know, got his customers up and running. And so, you know, post-pandemic kind of lockdown, he came out of it and said, man, I just don't have anything together. I had customers needed cars. And of course, nobody ordered cars before the pandemic.
Right.
Once the pandemic happened, then they needed cars, and they just didn't have time to get any built. So he said, hey, I'm building the car, but you think there's any way I can run some races at the beginning of the Summer Nationals? And so I think we ran the first week, and we won three or four. And
yep.
So then it's like, well, let's just keep going, and won a few more, and we won some more. And then they had a break in the Summer Nationals, and we decided he was going to put his car together during the break. And then we decided, well, we're already this far.
Why do that? When you're winning, just keep going, right?
And then ultimately, you know, it was crazy because, you know, they won, what, I think 16 or 18 races on the Summer Nationals Tour.
That's pretty cool.
And then 23 or 4 total for the year. So.
And that's the UMP class.
UMP, yes, yeah.
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 Anyway, everybody listening, you down in that, that's up in the Wisconsin, Minnesota.
I would say Midwest.
Midwest.
So Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee. But it even travels down towards us. So there's some racetracks in North Carolina that are UMP. So it's really interesting because, you know, you kind of have, I guess, what, three main groups. You got IMCA. Mm-hmm. You've got USRA. Is that right?
USRA.
Yeah. Which is USMTS are kind of the same
thing. People. They're really pretty close.
And then UMP. So, you know, you've got three different series, and really, it would be hard for a UMP driver to go run either of the other two. I think, you know, you can
same
compare
way.
Pretty easy between USRA and IMCA. There's a few differences, but you could get there. For us, I think we'd have to put a new car together to be able to run some of this stuff.
Well, we tried last year making an IMCA car and a USRA car and made one car out of that. Now we're done doing that. We're going to have an IMCA car and a USRA. We made it work, won two races with that situation. Everybody thought we had two cars for quite a while, but we didn't. Buddy and Tanner put together a package that was legal in IMCA and back and forth. But the UMP, I think the big difference in there is you guys don't have any motor rules. It's wide open, right?
Wide open motor rules. And it's been interesting because when we could run a spoiler and we had some things differently, we were able to balance the aero out a little bit. We got to where the motors were getting pretty sporty. I mean,
that's what I've
you know,
been
you
here.
were 900 horsepower, you know, 430 cubic inch. I mean, you were building some hot rods. And what we found is, an 8-inch wide tire. I love Hoosier tires, and they are great tires, but it's just physics, right? 8-inch wide tire, no aerodynamics.
You got to be able to get that.
You got to be able to put in the ground.
Get that contact to the ground, right?
So we got a couple of questions here. One of them was, what does Justin think about this season's aero package for the Super Speedway?
I'm interested to see what it looks like. You know, I feel like we've been searching on the super speedways to find something that personally I wish we'd go back to pod racing, the little two car tandems, because you knew what you had, right?
Yep.
And I feel like the wrecks were, you know, when you had wrecks, you weren't having these big massive wrecks where everybody was taking each other out. And the hard part is the cars have become more safe and guys feel more invincible, so then they drive more like an idiot and wreck the whole field. So I'll be interested to see what it does this year. I think that you know they've tried to speed the cars up to make them a little more uncomfortable, so the driver says, "Hey, maybe this isn't you know what I should be doing." But doesn't necessarily always work as far as what we needed to do in the front. So we'll see, but hopefully it's better.
Yeah. The next question is, who's the next NASCAR driver that you feel will give in to temptation and race the Chili Bowl?
Oh, that's a good one. You know, I saw Blaney here all week.
Really?
So Blaney's here with Chase Elliott. Although, knowing Mr. Blaney's boss, Mr. Penske, and missing a few years of Chili Bowl because Mr. Penske asked me to not run, I think I'm pretty confident I know his answer, what he's going to say. But, you know, I think that, you know, this year was cool because we had Kyle Larson, we had Christopher Bell, we had Ryan Newman, you had Chase Elliott, Chase Briscoe, Ryan Ellis, Garrett Smithley,
There's quite a few here. Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few drivers here. And what I think is funny is the more you see guys come in and do it, the more they talk about it, the more other people get interested in it. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's one or two next year that come and try to be a part of it.
Jump into it. And then there's just a statement on here says, old Kenny Wallace learned the hard way about changing his car up to run with the US MTS a couple of years ago.
He did that. Yeah, he did. He did for sure. You know, it is funny. I personally don't go run US MTS.
Yeah.
It's a slight issue for me on what tire brand they've got on their cars. So
I typically don't
go and run it. But, you know, I do have a lot of respect for those guys that travel that series. You know, modified racing has come so far in the last 10 years. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible.
Yep.
And I wish there was a little bit more of a way to have some crossover, you know.
Yep.
Just because I think that the talent level of those guys is incredible. I'd love to see what they could do some of our racetracks and vice versa. You know, I'd love to be able to travel to some of the racetracks and run, but maybe in the future we can make that happen.
To be one of the next questions. It says, what would it take to get the modified to 81 Speedway this year?
Well, I don't know that my modified could run at 81 Speedway, but not saying that 81 Speedway is out of the question, but mine might just be in my car. So
there you go. Anyway, there was USMTS was trying to get a race with UMP.
Yep.
And it all kind of blew up, and I thought I was getting pretty close to kind of race to see what a UMP car would do against the USMTS guys and stuff too. And Justin, I get what you're saying with the tires and stuff like that. Who's your guy that I am and everything else too. But in my area, I got to run with those guys every now and then. So I got to put that other tire on there as much as I don't like to do that or whatever, because I want to sell the Hoosiers and everything. That's also why we're running IMCA, because it's got the Hoosier tire and stuff too. And that's why we kind of did that from that part. But I would love to see if we couldn't get the USMTS and UMP guys together on a track and see how they compare, what happens. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. Let's go on to next step, because your dad kind of frowned at me last night. We're going to take Jake's car and Tanner's car, and we're going to go to Bristol and run the dirt. And so I think the reason I want to go so bad, it's Bristol's my favorite track that I've ever been to watch a NASCAR race.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just so mine much
too.
Fun.
Yep.
It's mine fun. Great. So when that came up, I said, we got to go. Got to go. And we're going to run the IMCA class, what we're going to run, because I know that trying to run against some UMP guys with Jake and everything else, it'd be tough to do. But Bristol's also going to, the next weekend, is going to have NASCAR there.
Yep.
Is that just the Cup cars, or is that?
So it's Cup and truck.
Cup
no
and truck.
Xfinity, which I'm angry about, because we should be there. But that's beside the point.
Can't get in the truck and go run it? Try.
I've been trying to lobby for that, but there's a lot of people that are trying to lobby the same thing.
I bet so.
You know, I am excited about the dirt racing at Bristol.
Yep.
I really am. I'm excited for the short track side of things with the late models, modified sprint cars, all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the other hand, I remember the first race there. You know, I remember the challenges that we had and what we went through. I mean, I remember calling my dad saying, how many standard weight or heavyweight wheels do you have? And how many can you get to us like overnight? And, you know, so there is going to be some challenges. I think the modified class, you know, obviously on a steel wheel, that helps a lot.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of things that I think are going to help the modified class, but you also have to look at the other side. Parts, right?
Parts,
parts are going to fail. And I'm not worried about the bigger teams, you know, the folks that do a really good job on car maintenance and things like that. I think those guys are going to be fine. But you know, there's some guys that maybe don't necessarily have the best, car maintenance program.
Oh yeah, yeah. I get it.
And I worry about those guys, you know, because here, you know, just like our heat race last night, here at the Chili Bowl, had a gentleman that crashed pretty handily. It was pretty impressive. And you know, my first thought was, is he okay? Right?
Yep.
Like it's just
the go-to.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the direction you go to. I mean, it makes you nervous.
Sure,
you know, when you see somebody else have an issue, it's a spot. Somebody you don't have to race, and that's great if you're looking for positions. But I'm not a fan of people getting hurt. So,
sure.
Not that I'm saying anybody's gonna get hurt at Bristol. I always worry about people and just the position. Listen, we're all racers. We're all willing to do stuff that's way dumber than we think it is in the moment until you get done and you're like, man, I probably should have prepared a little better for that situation. So that's my only goal is that folks will take this seriously and really prepare themselves for
the race. Get the car ready.
Here's the thing. When it's all said and done, it's going to be a fantastic, fantastic race weekend. I'm beyond excited for that.
Yeah, I am too. Excited to go, and they're already putting the dirt on there, and
it looks good.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised they put some sawdust, I think, down, or
looks like yeah,
wood chips down, and then putting the dirt over top of it. So
yeah, it's going to be fun, exciting, and I'm glad we're working on it this early too to get to prepping and getting it packed and doing everything you got to do and water.
I think they were worried it was going to freeze.
Oh, really?
I think they were worried the dirt was going to be frozen, so they didn't want to have frozen dirt and try to unclump frozen dirt and get it spread out. So they had to work on it. So yeah.
So it's going to be a fun time. I mean, we're setting the car up and everything a little differently. And I was talking to your dad last night about wheels, because that's the thing we're still trying to figure out what to do with wheels. We know we need a different wheel than we normally run.
Heavyweight wheels.
Yes.
Right front, right rear. No question.
No question. I know.
And you know, I wish the series would allow a beadlock. You know, so on the right front, we're not allowed to run a beadlock wheel. Yep. I don't know if you guys are. I don't think you are.
I'm saying no, but on the USMTS and USRA, yes, we can run beadlocks on both sides.
So I'm curious what will happen at Bristol, you know, if IMCA or UMP or whatever series is going to run there, if they will.
Who gives?
Yeah, if they're just going to say, hey, you know, this is a better option. Typically, the beadlocks are a little bit heavier wheel already.
Yeah,
you know,
they are.
So I don't know.
That's something we need to. I need to send a question up there. I've got a guy I've been emailing back and forth with questions and stuff. I guess he's the promoter of the race. I guess I need to ask him that if we can go and run that beadlock on that right front on IMCA. But UMP, you cannot run a beadlock either.
We cannot either.
Can't either.
Right rear only.
Right rear only.
So we run a cover, you know, but we got the little internal rings or whatever.
Yep.
So, you know, it wouldn't change a whole lot if we were to run a beadlock. I mean, I guess we'd be mounting and dismounting a lot more tires, but. Hey, that's normal, right?
Yeah, it drives me crazy how much time we spend on tire prep. It's crazy. Yeah. I wish
getting tires ready.
Yeah, not that soaking stuff. That's not. I'm talking about the grooving, the grinding, all that kind of stuff that goes into the play. I would love to stop the grooving, stop the siping.
Grooving for UMP.
Really?
Yeah. So UMP has cut it out completely. We can sipe. We can grind, but no more grooving.
No more grooving.
Yeah.
And you guys are running the M30 and M60s, right? Correct. Or are you running the 45s?
No, we're M30, M60. We can only run an M60 on the right rear. That's the only corner we're allowed to run it. There's been a few times in my time of this tire that I kind of wish I had, you know, 360s, but not too bad.
Not too bad. Yeah, I hear you. Anyway, the other thing I will tell you is, you know, because a couple years back, we were running the M30s and M60s at 81 Speedway, and then when they switched over to USRA last year, running that other tire we don't want to talk about, but I get it. But I will tell you, then we went back and we ran the NCRA series at Salina, and so we could put the M30 and 60 back on again. It was one of their optional tires, and I'm telling you, that tire is so much better. Some of the guys hated it there in Wichita because they couldn't get their cars balanced right, and it would chew one off, and I remember standing there, we were there on a Saturday afternoon getting ready to go race, and everybody's whining about their right rear, you know, was gone after the feature. And they looked at me and said, where are you at? And I said, my same right rear is on the car today as it was last week. Oh, it can't be. Well, yeah, it was. I ran the same damn 30 on my right rear, ran it 2 weeks in a row. So that's where some of the frustration come. But again, the USRA is what they went to. So that's what I got to race and everything else. Cause you know, it's my home track and got to support all those races as much as I'd love to get them switched over, but you know, it is what it is too.
We'll
right?
keep working on it. Right. You know, the thing is, it doesn't go unnoticed. You know, you show up at the racetrack and support the local series.
Yep.
You know, I think that's what it's really going to take. All of us, you know, just the short track scene right now is growing still. It's growing
I think every so day. Too.
And, the more support we can give to it, the better. And I know we do the same. You know, we're just lucky that all the local tracks to us are UMP. So we don't have to pick and choose between, you know, different series or whatever. We're very lucky in the fact that we have some A-level racetracks in the Midwest that are, you know, I can picture, you know, four or five within probably a two-hour range that on any given Friday or Saturday or Sunday, you're happy to go to, you know, you're excited to go to because they're just great racetracks and they run a good show and they promote them well. So,
you know, it's like the you know, me, they're locally stuff. I got to stay close with them hours I spend at the dealership and stuff like that too, but love to go to Lucas Oil, but man, it's 4 hours one way and 4 hours back. And I just, that 8 hours with the drive time, just not my cup of tea. You know,
maybe you need to get your pilot's license.
Josh got him right there.
Yeah. Just rent a little, join a little club and tell somebody else to take the car for you.
When we went to Kansas City and race at Lakeside, that's what we did. Yep. We sent his brother-in-law, took my rig and took off. And we jumped in the plane and flew there and flew back.
That's the way to do it.
It is the way to do it. So I get it.
It's not cheap, though.
No, it's not.
We're going to need more sponsors. So call now and we'll take sponsorship.
What part of racing is cheap, though?
Go-kart. No, that's not cheap either because I did that, too.
It's a great question.
It's a great question. So anyway, guess what? It's 10 o'clock already.
It is 10 o'clock.
We got a few questions coming in.
Yeah.
I wish we had some callers, but I get it. It happens every time we travel. Everybody sits back and listens and stuff. So, Justin, it's cool that you're here. Thanks for taking this time. I know you need to get back and get going, get ready to car. About what time do you start racing? Will you race, you think?
I don't know. So, we got one teammate that's in L Main. So, he'll come up pretty quick because I think there's an N Main. So, they'll do the N and the M, and then he'll be up. So, we're going to go get him ready. And then, you know, I would say I'm picturing somewhere around, you know, noon, 1 o'clock, that we'll get on the racetrack. It's way earlier than I'd like to be on the racetrack. I like to be on the racetrack when the sun goes down, but not the case this year. So
that's right. Just get after it, drive your butt off and get in there and keep moving. And what, it's four move each class?
Are different. I think the I main is actually six.
Six.
Good.
But then it's five for the next one. And then I go up like two or three mains, and then it goes down to four. And I'm like, man, we're going the wrong way here. I want more cars to come through. But they've got a theory on how they move people forward. So go move at least one or two races and
keep going.
I feel happy, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, this hour's blown by as always. Sometimes Josh and I tell each other we got to have a 2 hour show sometimes just to get things going. But Justin, again, thanks for the partnership with us, with Mel Hamilton Ford Racing and the Algar Shocks. I'm looking, it's going to be an exciting year. See what we can do with that program and stuff. Like I said, we got a lot of excitement at the store already from that part. So appreciate that. I appreciate you taking this hour hanging out with us. It means more to me than you can imagine. So
we're glad to do it.
We're always rooting you on, me and my daughter Ellen, my son Jake. We're always rooting you on Saturdays, watching what you're doing and everything with NASCAR. So appreciate that very much. Thanks again for being here. Gator, thanks for coming, hanging out with us, and everything you do for us too. Josh, it's time to go.
Let's do it.
I hate to say it, but it's time to go. Justin, good luck today.
Appreciate it.
Go make it happen. And thanks again for everything.
We're going to try. Appreciate it.
You betcha.